Gigi, it's fantastic to have you back with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you've been doing so many incredible things with these series and these various video series, but the one that you have out now is called Occulted. And this one, I think, is, you know, you've done the Mars one, which was incredible, and these others, but there's something very potent and timely about Occulted. Tell me what you're trying to do with that series. And it's very interesting to me because, you know, both of us look very much into the mystery work along the lines of the mystery schools. But what you're able to do, and I think you do it so well with this series, is bring all of that into 2025 and show exactly on a progression scale how these things relate. And one of the things that you brought up in the most recent episode was about blotting out the sun. Give me some idea what the series is about. And everyone here who's familiar with your work is just gratified to see you back. For those who don't know you and your work, you can treat this like a total introduction to what you're doing.
Perfect. Well, I'm a mystic. And so what Occulted is about in particular is I like to take news stories or trending topics, and then I kind of tear them apart and take a look at the esoteric underpinnings of what's going on. Mm-hmm. So in a recent episode, I did the bizarre phenomenon of Bill Gates blocking the sun, one of Bill Gates' companies blocking the sun by basically putting these chemicals in the sky. And a lot of people just look at like the farming significance or like the most material effect, which is really important, and we should look at that. But we can't forget about the spiritual reality of the sun, and that there are actually spiritual forces within the sun, both unseen and unmanifested, but also spiritual forces in the actual rays of the sun. And it's always been this way. We've always seen it this way for thousands of years. The sun is a central figure in most mystery teachings, and it is the external emanation of the Christ, actually. And so when you understand the esoteric underpinnings of something like blocking the sun, it actually is, on the occult level, blocking the Christ and blocking the influence of the Christ. And so it's exactly like it's a black magic practice, I would say, from the occult side. You know, that's what I would say about blocking the sun, because the sun actually is part of the earth and humanity's evolution. So that's one of the things we get into with Occulted.
Really interesting. Think about the esoteric significance of the sun. Everyone is aware on every level of the beneficial influence of the sun. And it's very interesting for the kind of environmentalist type, World Economic Forum type, to try to make the sun your enemy and something to be fought against in this sense. What are they doing? Let's go into their mindsets a little bit, you know, to the extent that we can attribute it to some rationale. What are they doing by blocking out the sun? And if that is a Christ solar spirit that they're blocking, what's going on there? Why would they be interested, one, in blocking the sun, but then on the deeper esoteric side, they'd be interested in blocking out that Christ consciousness?
Yes. Well, the sun is a harmonizing influence. So if the sun is blocked on a spiritual level, what's going to happen is you have what would be called lunar forces or darker forces, lower astral forces, eight sphere forces, even to use the anthroposophical kind of definition. Those are going to increase because now the rays of the sun are not permeating man. They're not permeating any kingdoms of life. We're not receiving them. The world isn't receiving the initiating and purifying and harmonizing and balancing forces of the sun, the radiance of the sun, both spiritual and physical. There's value there on both levels. So what happens is the darker forces on the planet can build up much faster. So one of the first things that people will tell you, for example, if you have a haunted house, you have negative spirits in your home, or just energies that have become kind of you know, dark and building up, one of the first things you do is you open the windows and you let the sun in. One of the ways you sanitize clothing is to leave it in the sun. So the sun is a purifier. It's a harmonizing force. And so when that's blocked spiritually, it allows kind of like your spiritual filth to build up on the planet. It allows negative entities to build up. It allows negative forces to be less challenged. Right? And so.
Yes. Wow. That's really interesting, because when we go into the psychology of the, you know, the type, like Bill Gates is particularly identified with this sun blotting activity. But many of these people, from Bezos, Musk, and others, they seem to have some strange overbearing shadow around them that is influencing them along this line. So we can see them on one hand as individuals, and then there's this other influence that's sweeping in. Now, you and I have done a number of shows around Ahriman and Ahrimanic tendencies. You were talking about the eighth sphere there, which is this concept dealing with this kind of soulless technological spirit form. What would you say defines something like the eighth sphere now? Like, what's a good example of what we're dealing with? You know, would artificial intelligence, this AI thing, would that be kind of a key element of the eighth sphere?
Yeah, in Rudolf Steiner's cosmology, that would be exactly what it is. And the eighth sphere sort of has different manifestations. So on a very spiritual level, the eighth sphere is sort of created by, you could say, Ahrimanic entities or Luciferic entities, basically kind of lower entities that parasitically rest actual matter and forces away from humanity. So they take it from humanity and they wrest it away, and they create an alternate sphere around the earth. Now, this is very similar in the New Age to like the lower astral world.
Yes.
Or the lower astral plane in like modern parlance, but turn of the century would be like the eighth sphere in Rudolf Steiner's cosmology. So the eighth sphere is made of us. It's made of our own thoughts. It's made of our own feelings. It's made of the parts of ourselves that we reject, that we deny, and that are unholy, or, you know, that's sort of what the eighth sphere is made of. So it's kind of like a devolutionary plane as well. But then when you get to very high science. Now, very high science is basically no different than occultism. So when you get into these different advanced technologies, these are magical technologies. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as turning on a light switch. It's not the same as turning on your toaster or the fan in your room. These are technologies that affect the etheric and spiritual world. And particularly because human beings are not rightly aligned, we're not perfected, they automatically bring forth the lower world, because in order to use something like that, you'd have to be pretty much perfect, you know, or at a very high level of advancement.
Yeah.
to be augmenting like that. So when you have all these discordant frequencies, like radiation from satellites, right, like the increasing electrification of the earth, you know, Rudolf Steiner directly associates that with the drawing the eighth sphere in, or kind of around humanity, and this outsourcing of our spiritual abilities into technology, you know, is us entering in many ways into the eighth sphere, us atrophying in our mind and in our spiritual responsibilities, because technology is just going to do it. We're outsourcing everything into this technological world at the expense of our own spiritual development. And that is a huge creative factor for the eighth sphere as well. So there's a technological component that actually thins the veil. It actually brings the spiritual beings in the eighth sphere here. It makes them more obvious. It allows them to be here, and blocking the sun is part of that, you know. But then there's also we're also creating it at the same time. And so there's this intersection between technology and spirituality, which really defines the eighth sphere.
It's fascinating. It reminds me so much of these Edgar Cayce readings that deal with sunspots.
This
is back then. I mean, this I think this reading is from 1940. And he's saying that it is the activity of thought on the earth that is manifesting the sunspots. And then he attributes it and brings us back to the Tower of Babel story and the whole, you know, everyone speaks a different language at a certain point because they were building this tower to heaven. And I think it's interesting because that particular myth has a great resonance in this period of time. One of the things I wanted to say about the eighth sphere is it was inadvertently let out during the, you know, the public mystery schools, theosophy coming up, and Blavatsky had appointed all these various people to go out and kind of teach the theosophical doctrine. And you had this figure, A.P. Sinnott, who came from a long line of writers and bankers. And he was an interesting character, and he had been kind of lulled into thinking he was associating with this master and interacting with him and getting all these messages. But as it turned out, in his book, this Esoteric Buddhism, he releases this idea of the eighth sphere, and he attributes it to the moon. And then Steiner comes back later and says, look, the eighth sphere was the top secret in the mystery schools. It was let out too early. I'm going to address it as far as I can just to show you how wrong Sinnott was. Why do you think the eighth sphere was kept at such a top level in the mystery schools? What is it about the eighth sphere that would be the top secret?
Well, I think that generally there are these kind of mysteries that should never be revealed before their time, you know, because if the public image of the mystery gets damaged, it's very difficult to get it back to a more pure image.
Right.
So there's definitely, you know, human capacity evolves over time, and so people have to have the capacity to absorb, you know. But I think ultimately, and this is just my opinion, I think the eighth sphere is also the teaching of the abyss. And I think it is the teaching for the age of Sophia, or I think it's a teaching that's supposed to come forward now, because I think it is prominent in the feminine mysteries in particular.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, you know, in the Eastern tradition, they have the Mula Prakriti, which is the primordial abyss or the primordial dark matter. And that's typically a feminine substance. It's a feminine aspect of the mysteries. I think that it is for this time, which is leading into the sixth great civilization. So now, between here and the sixth great civilization is when I believe it's appropriate to teach that, which in the anthroposophical cosmology is also the age of spiritual science, which is when we can look at something objectively. So earlier, humanity could not view spiritual things objectively. We could only view them and enter into them as being part of them, which is why we dealt so much with myth and story. And then only recently, since around the 1500s, have we ever been able to view the spiritual world objectively, just as objectively as the natural world. That's a capacity we only recently have. And the things that the eighth sphere are associated with are so dark, actually. And they can be so disturbing. It directly deals with death.
Mm.
And that can be some of the most difficult things to get into. And so you have to have that objective level of perception to go into teachings about the eighth sphere and not be totally absorbed by it. It's like that famous phrase that says, don't stare at the abyss for too long, otherwise you'll become the abyss. Well, the eighth sphere is metaphorically the abyss or oblivion. That's a part of that teaching, in my opinion. So I think there's a time for that, and that's when we can have objectivity so that we're not totally absorbed by that kind of teaching. Because a lot of people have become absorbed by the kind of teachings around the eighth sphere, I would say.
Oh, there's no question. And it's interesting to me as well, because you think about it as a realm, And then you start to think, who inhabits the realm, you know? And it is too much of a temptation to interact with that. I've always found it an interesting mystery, though, because, you know, when Steiner is saying that, he doesn't say these things lightly, in my opinion. So when he says the eighth sphere is really off limits, and it was let out too soon, and it was let out wrongly, that gets to very deep mysteries. As Steiner, you know, just like when he said that Mercury and Venus were switched at a certain point, these are very deep concepts that you really only find in his spiritual science. One of the things I want to say, though, is the modern phenomena that we deal with in the UFO file and the whole wave of what we've dealt with since the 20th century and humanity's attempting to grapple with this subject. And how does that, this whole thing about, you know, these beings that are seem to be almost, in a sense, some kind of cyborg, but also sentient on a certain level, how does that relate, let's say, to the grays in the UFO phenomena, to the beings that might inhabit that eighth sphere? Is that something that you would say is connected?
I would definitely say that. I think that if we understood the spiritual components a lot better, including the eighth sphere, I think we could blow away our understanding of ETs and aliens. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you look at what an alien gray is, and even by the accounts of experiencers, they always say that there's some kind of cyborg component to them, that they are basically yes. robot things.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at that, sometimes a good way to view something on an occult level is to look at what that symbolizes, just very simply. And you could say that that kind of symbolizes humanity that has been captured by the eighth sphere. And if we go down this path of transhumanism, right, if we go down this path of, you know, that's in front of us, we no longer become natural human beings and we begin to atrophy and deteriorate. So when we're looking at an alien gray, one way that we can look at it, and we should probably have many different ways that we observe it, but one way that we look at it could definitely be that this is sort of like either humanity in the future, if we do begin to be absorbed into the eighth sphere, this is probably what we would look like. If we do take transhumanism down 5-10 generations, this is probably what we're going to look like. So you can look at it as we're engaging with a symbol of ourselves. You can also look at it how you've brought up so brilliantly in your series, which is that we really don't know very much about the Atlantean period.
Right.
And we're sort of drawing all these conclusions and making all these formulations. We don't understand our own history and our own past. And we could also look at that and say, you know, as you pointed out, that these could be entities that are related to the fall of Atlantis, where we've crossed this exact threshold with transhumanism. And as Casey says, genetic modification,
yeah.
cloning oh. things, you know. Why don't we look at it that way? That's certainly more holistic than, you know, when we look at it through the lens of, is this the effect of the eighth sphere on humanity in our era? Is this the effect that it has on our consciousness? Is this the pull to externalize, to be hyper-materialistic, to not go inward and begin to develop, but to constantly project spirituality and our development outward to a point where it destroys us? And I think that's what we're seeing. And you can look at it as purely from spiritual imagery, or you can say, wait a minute, this sounds exactly like what happened in Atlantis. Yeah. And, right. you know, if you look at the reality that people say Atlantis fell, you know, 11,000 years ago or something like that, that's not that long ago. That's yeah. not really that long ago, you know?
Exactly. No. And in the chart of true world history, you know, as we have it, 4.5 billion years.
Yeah.
10,000 years is a little tiny period.
Very, very, very small period. Yeah. And what if there are, you know, survive certainly so many myths. If you look at different cultural myths, they all talk about people coming up from under the ground. There's so much reference to being surviving a great flood.
Right.
Yet we don't go down that direction for some reason. We want it to be sensational. We want it to be sci-fi. We want it to be this thing that's, again, too externalized, too outside of ourselves, rather than just going inward or just looking at what we already know. So it's like an escapist thing or something, too.
Oh, that's fascinating. You know, I should just flat out ask you, what do you think that the grays are?
If I had to say, I would say that they are a crypto terrestrial. I think that what we are talking about when we discuss alien grays or aliens, I think we're really talking about, where do we begin the conversation? So where do we start it? Not necessarily saying that I know everything or that we know everything about this topic, every person's experience or everything that's ever happened, not from that place of arrogance, but just looking at it and saying, okay, where do we start? And then go from there. It doesn't make any sense to me to start the conversation as saying, this is an alien from whatever planet. That doesn't make sense to me. I wouldn't start there. I wouldn't write it off or anything. I just wouldn't start the conversation there. I would personally start it where we know that there has been a fallen civilization in our past. We, you know, some people may not recognize that, but I would say that that's just sheer materialism. You know, we have to understand that the Earth evolves over long periods of time, and we certainly have had civilizations before our own, the Atlantean, the most advanced. And if we listen to people who have retrocognition, which is the ability to look into the ancient past, like Edgar Cayce, like pretty much every single mystery school teacher will spend a portion of their teaching career on this one topic.
Yes.
Whether it's Rudolf Steiner, whether it's Blavatsky, whether it's Manly P. Hall, whether it's some lesser teachers that, you know, C.W. Eliot, Ignatius Donnelly.
Yes.
All these mystics, it's like a mandatory thing that they must teach about is Atlantis. It's in all their work. And so when you look at that, you think like, well, there's already been a period of humanity that has experimented with genetic manipulation, that has experimented with transhumanism, which you've spoken about on your show for years now, about the things and about Cayce, and you've covered this in your various documentaries as well. It's like, why don't we start there and look at it and say, could this be some kind of group that is underground or maybe at times able to blend in with humanity that is from an earlier period of the Earth? Now, if that were me, and I were, you know, living, you know, under the Earth as basically kind of mutant that had suffered from transhumanism and weird genetic I mean, then so many people who have these, gray alien encounters, it's all about trying to create these hybrids. Well, if you had destroyed your genetics in Atlantis by going into the folly of transhumanism, you certainly would want to try to merge with people on the surface. And if you didn't want people to look underground for you and find your little empire down there, then you would tell everyone that you were from the sky. I'm just saying that's where I would personally start. I think there's more evidence to support that.
Interesting. Wow. There's a lot of interesting things around that for me, because I always think with the grays, they're always doing a lot of testing. One, they always tend to look exactly like each other. I mean, there are versions once in a while that you hear about that are different, but over and over again, when they're recovered and things, which I think are the best kind of explanations, when military people run across them and then at the end of their lives tell their wives, well, you know, this thing was 4 foot tall. It had big eyes. All those descriptions seem to be the same from behind the scenes. So that race has definite attributes. Mm-hmm. I remember talking with Charlie Fultz. I didn't interview him. He's one of the guys who was associated with the Allagash incident. I bumped into him on the street and we started talking for some reason.
Wow.
And he told me all about being abducted with these two mass art features in the Allagash in Maine, which is very dense. And you have to helicopter in there to do fishing trips and stuff. And I found out that that whole area, the Allagash, the Indians up there used to call that like Fear Mountain, you know, so they already knew there were problems up there. But one of the things that he said, his best recollection when he was looking at the being was, it looks like a large insect in spandex. And he got the impression, you know, he said that the people who were abducted with him had these impressions. Well, it was benevolent. It was trying to open me up to mathematics. Oh, it was evil. It was trying to haunt my soul with demonic stuff. And he said, all I got from it was scientific chore. They were carrying out a scientific chore. And when they returned us, you know, we forgot about it for years. So, but the beings themselves, Gigi, I think are intriguing because there is this signature of how they appear. And why would an eighth sphere being that becomes a gray be 4 foot tall? Is that a degeneration sense?
I would say, yeah. I would say that if you're looking at generations of struggle, where the, and also we were talking about the sun earlier, I also personally feel that the sun changes over time. So the energy that it emits actually is not the same as it would have emitted 10,000 years ago. The sun is becoming more intense due to the evolution of the earth and man. And so I think that the sun also has an effect on basically anyone that is basically stopped or kind of hindered their evolution, their own personal human evolution, because they've gone into transhumanism. I think the sun would have a very negative effect on their form. And so I think they would have to operate in very specific conditions underground, or be very limited in what they can be exposed to.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So I think that when you're looking at this long of a period of degeneration, you know, it looks like they're just hanging on to their form. You know, I mean, they've got like a little tiny, like sprigs of hairs on the top of their head, and they're just hanging on to it. It's not going well. And I think it's, you know, I mean, and there's now those insect ones. And so I think that it's a battle against God. You know, we know, you know, that humans were created in the image of God directly. And so our form is really a microcosm of the macrocosm. So when we start messing with the form and thinking that we know better than God and I can engineer my body to have certain capacities or strengths, it's going to, you're playing God rather than harmonizing with God. And I think that's a very good reason why their body could look like that.
You know? That is fascinating. So you are actually joining the KC Atlantis automaton with the eighth sphere being with the grays. This is all one thing that we're looking at that is manifested in esoteric literature, in human experience. That's all one thing.
It's all one thing. It's all one thing. It's the it's that influence of the eighth sphere on humanity and the beings within that sphere that draw them into this condition. It's a devolution.
Well, it's weird because the very elite, the technocratic elite that's running the world now, seem to have the same fascination. And they seem to be kind of in league with this. And we don't know to what extent or how much they even know about these beings. But obviously, there's some correlation there because it's seeping into how they do things. They want, you know, this merging with the mineral kingdom, the merging with machines. And, you know, they want to become immortal through the technology. This was the same problem that caused the destruction last time around.
Oh, 100%. They're just repeating it. They're possessed by that same eighth sphere impulse, and just playing it all over again. And it probably direct possession, you know, at this point in time. You know, it's very clear what creates immortality, you know, in classical mystery or classical, especially esoteric Christianity. It's very clear that immortality comes through basically transforming your spiritual bodies and your physical body through Christ within you. It's an internal process that occurs. You cannot externalize that process into machines. So it's also incredibly antichrist. And the antichrist, or Ahriman, is directly associated with the eighth sphere. And so rather than going inside yourself, you're perpetually drawn outside. That's what the eighth sphere does. It perpetually draws you outside of yourself to evolve. Everything is taken literally. Hypermaterialism, that's all the antichrist force inside of humanity. And that, the grays, in my opinion, is what that would, if you took it to its logical conclusion, that's what you're looking at. You know, the cloning stuff, this stuff, you know, all of it is, yeah.
Wow. And cloning yourself out to a point where there's no matter left. And, but still the incredible things, for example, the stories in relation to the grays of the incredible telepathy.
Yeah.
The ability to alter time and physics.
Yeah. Well, they have this, they have the tech. That's the one thing that they have. So they don't have the spiritual evolution. They don't have true spiritual knowledge or spiritual understanding, because if they did, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing, right?
Right.
But what they do have is this technology. They have retained that. They have the knowledge of the technology. They have it. And that's what they use. That's the one thing that they have. That's their one power, their one control.
Oh, wow. That is really interesting. So how do you, in with your esoteric perspective, you know, and say in the work that you're doing with the occulted series, how do you see an event like Roswell, for example, the most famous UFO case of all? I have all kinds of impressions and ideas about it, but what do you think?
I would say that it's most likely for me that if you consider that there could be this civilization underground that's been under there since Atlantis. I mean, this isn't, I mean, look at Edward Bulwer Lytton. Look at all the different occultists that yes. wrote about these yeah. underground. There's probably more that I don't know about, but, you know, this is something that people have kind of hinted at as well in literature, in film, you know.
The Vril, as it were.
Yeah, 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 exactly. The yeah. Vril. But if you think about it, this could be one of those things from this underground world that has all of this technology, but is completely degenerate on every other level, degenerate physically, degenerate spiritually. And I know that, you know, at some point, I mean, they've probably made a deal with people on the surface to carry out their desires, exchange for technology. And people think this is an alien thing, like the aliens gave, you know, Eisenhower or someone this technology. Oh, yeah. You know, there's these things like these are aliens giving humans technology. What if yeah. we flip that and mm-hmm. we say there is an underground civilization that's technologically advanced that is an offshoot of humanity itself that has retained this technology? And then you see these, they could have these crafts. They could have made deals with people on the surface to redevelop these crafts, because we know from various different mystics that, and this is before flight, by the way, this is before, you know, the Wright brothers, people are talking about incredible crafts that fly in space and stuff like that during the Atlantean period. Oh, so yeah. all you have to do is think, well, could they have just recreated the crafts that they had during that period? And they could have a relationship with certain groups on Earth where we'll give you this technology if you give us what we need to create it, and we could form this, you know, kind of pact. And that could actually be what's going on, but it doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with Tau Ceti or wherever, right?
Oh, interesting. Well, this is interesting because that 19th century literature, Philo's the Tibet and his accounts of his previous life in Atlantis include these incredible airships and that they can go underwater and do all these incredible things, which you didn't have available in that period. So he's tuning in, he's grabbing this. So Casey's incredible story, the incredible tapestry of this air flight technology that was available, and also the Atlanteans' ability to go, according to him, anywhere in the universe, depending on how they thought.
Yes.
So they already had the very high, high level, and here we are re-experiencing it, and we are reconfronting ourselves and our own reincarnation past, which is why when we get into mystery schools, again, reincarnation, like the story of Atlantis, comes up over and over again.
Oh, 100%. And it's also why people, I think, have such, like, sometimes really deep feelings about it and weird feelings about it. Yeah. I think it's why people are fascinated by it. Like, people get really fascinated because I think there's something very deep within their being that knows and that is wanting to remember. But unfortunately, we don't really have that structure of the mystery schools that you're mentioning to give us that framework in which to observe these things. We have science fiction movies. We have people from three-letter agencies that constantly infiltrate the conversation because they want to, you know, sell you whatever weapons or whatever they want to do with that. So it's like we can't even have the podcast scene is completely controlled now. At least like there's around this topic, it seems like it's very difficult to get any meaningful conversations around it. So there's all this bizarre stuff going on, but it's been very challenging to form a meaningful framework around it that's not essentially science fiction, which makes people not want to take it seriously that are not familiar with it. So there's a real struggle right now with it, I would say.
The battle is over the narrative, clearly. And the podcast domination by this kind of pop click thing, which draws a lot, they need a lot of content. So they draw a lot from the genuine kind of independent media, but they're not independent media. They are, I mean, the forces behind them are probably the very same forces that launched the mainstream media in the beginning.
Yes, exactly. I think that people think because somebody is appearing on YouTube or Rumble or Twitter and they're not on, you know, a mainstream channel, that suddenly they're independent. And the reality is that no, a lot of people who are very much Mockingbird media, they've just moved into where people are watching, as people should expect.
Right.
You know, they're just moving into where the eyeballs are. And it's disappointing. It's really disappointing to see how mishandled this particular topic is.
Yes.
Because you'll see people who are incredible on the political side, on history or on, you know, these more mundane topics, finances. But then when it comes to advanced technology, when it comes to ancient history, when it comes to spiritual topics and that intersection, it's often very poorly handled. And that's needs to be well handled, well stewarded, because that's the future. That's where we're going. So it's like, it's just so many of the people that I see that do these rounds on podcasts are very clearly selling a narrative or even sometimes selling a product.
Right.
So and it's such an imperative. I mean, this technology that's coming forward is like a steel trap. You know, we have to talk about it now. You know, I'm preaching to the choir here with you and your audience, but it's like we could be a lot farther along on this podcast scene and so much of independent media was more brave or at least more honest around it.
So they want the sensationalism. They do. They want the, like, you know, there's a face melting gray out there, or you know, they, and
I hate that guy.
There's an amazing thing going on right now where I think that the the Lou Elizondo thing, which we've talked about over the years. And, you know, we did a show 5 years ago that it laid out the entire thing. And now people are starting to catch on that, like, oh yeah, he's counterintelligence. I guess that means he lies a lot. but we had this guy out there for so long and doing this. But I think for their purposes, with the kind of DOD, you know, Chris Mellon, that whole thing, the UFO threat thing, they ran into difficulties with him. And I think they intentionally pitched him by having him hold up a phony photo.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, intelligence guys, they know that they're the results. They can see things 5 or 6 steps ahead. So he knew when he held that up, what was going to happen, what was going to be the result. But instead, he went ahead and did it. And so, you know, he becomes the kind of fail in all of that. And now they're bringing forward, G.G., Avi Loeb. Not that they won't resuscitate Lou, by the way, but as they have how many times?
A lot.
But it is interesting with Avi Loeb because he's over here. He's at the astrophysicist lab, which is like 5 minutes from here, and at Harvard. And what's going on with him, I think, is fascinating because for a long time, you know, he went out into the Pacific Ocean and he's like, oh yeah, you know, a piece of a Oumuamua landed there and it's part of an alien craft and all of this nonsense. Now, he comes straight out of Talpiot, which is Israeli intelligence, comes over here doing the astrophysicist part, and he puts, when he assembles his team on the science side over at Harvard, he puts Mellon and Lou right there. So the CIA instantly infiltrated this effort to look into UAPs. And they had a whole ceremony where they put the thing on the telescope. And, you know, you could imagine my horror. And they're doing this whole thing. And it's like, oh, Harvard, the UAP telescope. But, you know, I knew what was really going on with it. Here's the interesting thing for me. Now they have him with this menacing interstellar object. And you have all these different publications picking up this thing. And he's saying, oh, it's going to hit by Halloween, GG. You know, the UFO threat is on. We need to defend against this thing. And really going out on a line saying, that's no object in space. That's an intelligently piloted, aggressive craft. Where do you think they're going with this? This is kind of a weird test for the Avi Loeb stuff, which has been hanging out here in the background, which I believe originally was a kind of a Oumuamua thing. You know, Oumuamua was a genuine, you know, very large space rock that came cruising in our system. But it's interesting about Oumuamua because he grabbed onto it and he said, oh, it's AI spaceship and we can communicate with it through our AI. So this seems to be some track of where they're going, but where do you think they're going with the Avi Loeb transhumanist this UFO threat coming in?
Well, the UFO threat thing is, like, as you said, that's so Wernher von Braun, you know, the last card at the end of the at the end of the cycle. But as you're talking about it, because did you say he was Israeli intelligence?
He was Talpiot, yes.
For 10 okay, because that reminds me of, this whole thing reminds me of what seems to be a much larger operation, which is that Yuri Geller and Puharik.
Oh,
were also,
yes.
They were
yes.
also trying to pitch the same thing in like the 90s or the 2000s. And they wrote in, I think Yuri wrote it in his book, he said that he was getting psychic messages from the aliens. And then as he was tuning into it, he was realizing that it was basically like this object out in space that he had determined was basically a like Rhombus 4000, which was like a spaceship or something.
Yes.
But it's a spaceship that seems to emit numbers, sequences, and messages. And this is a completely, it's like this completely harmonic idea. It's also very, very adjacent to the black light satellite mythos that's out there, that there are these satellites that exist, ancient satellites like an Atlantean satellite or this ancient satellite from somewhere else that also travels around and emits these messages to people or frequencies. They can track it. So this is a little bit adjacent to the sort of, because Puharic was also associated with Israeli intelligence, allegedly, yes, as well.
Oh, yeah.
So this could have been an early incarnation, this Puharic Yuri Geller, you know, space threat or thing out in space that's, you know, out there could be a planned observation to, you know, they could do many things with that. They could rewrite human history, which is something they very deeply want to try to do. They can do the alien threat, which sounds very similar to the drone thing that they tried last year over New Jersey. They had all of these different kinds of drones flying around.
There's no explanation for any of that. The official explanations are ridiculous. We had 2 months of drones all over the place.
Yeah.
To the point where President-elect Trump put drone defenders on top of his little caravan of motorcade, and they had these blasters ready for the drones because they didn't know what was going on. There's no explanation for it.
And it's just like that, though. It's like, is this what we're lining ourselves up for again, except Avi Loeb now gets to say, well, I saw that with my telescope, so let me tell you what it is.
Right.
And then Avi Loeb gets to be on every single news station and get funding for whatever he is doing there. There's always something about, I think, bringing forward advanced technology to the public and then also trying to redefine what we think our history is. I think those are two very common themes that they want to do. And I think also the COG thing that you've mentioned repeatedly too, like they want to create this crisis so they can say, you know, I'm the president now, and it's, you know, the military.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. The sky event that could bring in the emergency powers is like a great prize in all of that. But the infrastructure is so well built up for the continuity of government group that, you know, it's built for this massive emergency, and therefore it gives them the ability to do it. So that's an excellent point. It is interesting, too, because what they've done is they've replaced the whole idea of a UFO elder, where, you know, there are guys like J. Allen Hynek, for example, in the 70s and 80s, who came out of the government, but he was like, you know, they're not telling you the truth about Blue Book, which I think he was being brave there. And he would go to these different, you know, cases and accounts, and they made him part of the Close Encounters movie and everything like that. Mm. So here's this kind of elder statesman, and he's working on the idea of revelations to the public. Avi Loeb is a weird case, and they're kind of moving him into that position of Hynek. And so he's the, like, overseer. He has the scientific credential. But in his thing, he's not working a, hey, let's have disclosure for the public. He has the, here's a UFO threat. It's coming in. It's AI. We need to defend against it.
The AI thing is, so he's saying that it's AI, like that it is like an alien AI?
Yes. So he first started with this theme when he said Oumuamua was an AI. He also thought the thing that crashed, there was a meteorite that crashed in the Pacific, and he spent all this time and money on, you know, Harvard's money. And they did this whole thing of saying, oh, it was part of an AI craft that was sent here to give us a message and scan our system and all this.
Oh, and I remember then they had that spaceship that would release all those little solar-powered...
Yes.
The mothership thing, which was something that people associated with the government had already thought about and invented. So, the AI aspect is very weird because there is always this weird undercurrent to artificial intelligence that absolutely does not have to be there, where they always try to deify it. They always try to bring artificial intelligence into the spiritual sphere.
Oh, right.
And into, like, spiritual communication. Like, you know, you'll hear, you know, someone like Musk be like, well, it's like summoning a demon. And then Jordy Rose will have some presentation talking about D-Wave, and he'll go out of his way to compare it to, you know, Lovecraft's Great Old Ones.
Wow.
And, you know, so, and you know, Yuval Noah Harari talks about it in a very spiritual way. Peter Thiel was fumbling around talking about eternal life and AI. So there's this weird intersection that we don't know what to do with in the culture, where
Right.
the people who create the AI and that are involved in it obviously have spiritual beliefs around it, where they believe, I would argue, that from their own conversations, from what they talk about, from how they talk about it, how they even program their AI, I think that they believe that the AI is basically something that can contain an entity, something that can be like a looking glass thing, like with Q, like the weird Q thing where the technology is psychic. At the highest level,
oh,
it is psychic.
Yes.
And
an
it
interface.
It's an interface, and perhaps it does have the capacities to interface, but I would argue that, the way that they speak about it, I would not want to interface with it. The way that they talk about it, it's not something that I would probably want to do. But so there's
excellent
this
point. Excellent point. Yeah. What are you interacting with there? Gigi,
yeah.
I guess that is fascinating, but I guess it leads us really into this conversation about CERN. And you and I have tackled CERN on different occasions, but I think it's more clear now than ever, now that they're building CERN 2, which is 20 times the size of the original and has a budget over $25 billion now,
wow.
Which is remarkable for any scientific project. This is incredible. You had great insights about CERN. And what I want to do is take you back into something that we looked at called the CERN Tarot.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about what they did there, and Suzanne Treister was the artist that they hired to do it, and obviously it's an incredible artistic achievement incorporating all of these various elements, but it reads kind of like an Aramonic guidebook.
It does.
Let's look at that as the foundation. There's so many things. I want to say this about CERN too. CERN is the actual organization, and the Hadron Collider, which is the particle collider to find the Higgs boson, and that's the thing they're going to make 20 times the size of the current one that they shut off recently. CERN, then, the organization, is actually a nuclear organization, and the Hadron Collider is their greatest achievement. So the Hadron Collider now has all these cousins, including the Great Alice Collider, a direct attribute of this Alice in Wonderland style technology. When they had Treister out there, and she's incorporating everything from LSD to UFOs to DARPA to Nikola Tesla to all of these different aspects in her making of this tarot deck. And I also think the tarot deck is an ode to the Macy conferences, the Orphic Circle. And you've done excellent work bringing in what the Orphic Circle is actually really all about. How do you see, for example, some of those? We can select a couple of those cards. We looked at them before the show. But take, for example, something that she was doing with the MK Ultra card there. There's kind of a celebration in it, in a sense. How do you see the deck in general? What cards, what images stand out for you, or just concepts generally?
Well, the deck is so massive. I mean, the concepts that she's portraying is everything from political figures and political ideologies to government agencies to social movements that have come up at different times and been impactful. She's using a lot of historical figures. It's like Susan Treister has this 5,000 million foot view of all of this.
Yeah.
And that, quite honestly, her Hexen CERN Tarot looks like a big revelation of the method. It looks like something that she's revealing to people. And it's so vast. It's so broad. She has an MK Ultra card. She has a card called Dream Sharing, which I think is the Six of Chalices, and or the Six of Cups, which, you know, is unusual because I was actually just talking to Olivia recently about how there's this bizarre thing going on where people will think something in their own mind, like never speak it out, yet an ad will appear on their phone. Right? And they're like, I didn't even talk about this. I'm totally by myself. And then people also talk about how they'll have these dreams. People have specific dreams about Trump or this person or that person. And then I'll see it even on my own videos or on my forums on my website, people being like, I had a dream like that. I
Oh,
had a dream
wow.
like that. And so
Interesting.
that this card, which is Six of Cups in Hexen, talks about that. They talk about DARPA. They talk about the Macy conferences, as you said. So it's this extremely broad picture. They're almost overwhelming to look at. They have so much information in them.
Oh, absolutely. I have to jump right in on that telepathic technology thing, the psychic technology, because Musk recently came forward and said, Neuralink, we now have the ability where people are thinking something and it actually is doing the writing for them. So they're going into that. Now, we know that they've had the psychic technology interface for a while, and people like Musk are supposed to roll it out and make it trendy or whatever. But that is a kind of a threshold spiritually, like the body is the temple. And once you have something of that nature in there, and again, I know how they use it with Neuralink, where they're saying, if somebody has lost some capacity to move, we can make their body do it. I believe that certainly that type of technology is something that can be a gift to humanity. However, its misuse is very easily obvious, which is that's kind of the cover story, in my opinion. What they want to do, they've been figuring out for a while with the technology to get closer and closer to you, right? And they thought about this whole thing, like, will people accept a chip and all this kind of thing. So the ultimate thing for them is getting inside. And the vaccine and part of that was also included in this.
And
One of the
that's
things.
possession. Something from the outside in is possession.
Yes,
Something from the inside
yes.
out is evolution.
That's what I was going to ask, which is, what is the cutoff point where something actually endangers you, even if it progresses you with human augmentation and all this kind of thing, but it actually becomes, the red line in the sand where it sets you back and cuts you off from your own nature of spirituality. It disconnects you from the body as the temple to the higher spiritual realms. Tell me a little bit about that, and then we'll bring Trister back in.
Yeah, well, it is a. Sorry, what was that?
It's basically like, what is the line in the sand for something, human augmentation, something that you would take inside, and something like a Neuralink, which would give you the ability to,
Right.
for example, they could probably give you something as a Neuralink chip in your skull that would make you psychic. But what is the line in the sand there as far as your spiritual development? Like, what's the cutoff point where it's just like, no, the technology can't come within the body?
I think that you can't do it at all.
Right.
I think that all the technology is an overdevelopment. It's a hyperdevelopment. It's more like a cancer. So we can have a path where we use technology and AI and things like that, but it should never enter the body. And one of the reasons you could make an argument that if you have like a degenerative brain issue or whatever it is, that would be okay. However, as Elena Freeland has pointed out, the environment that we're in is one where we're being irradiated all the time by internet. Right?
Yes. So
So
we become the
basically,
walking towers.
yes. So
Right.
if there was no internet that was irradiating us all the time, then maybe you could have something like a Neuralink technology. And that would be okay. Right? But it's too much. And if you want to get that's up to you. However, you have to think about that you may never ever think your own thought again.
Oh, wow.
because it's a choice. Because if you've got this much electrification going on and radiation, and then you're going to get a chip in your brain, you're not going, there's a really good possibility that you're not going to be able to control your mind anymore. So maybe you've lost control of your body, but this will make it so you lose control of your mind. And in my opinion, there should be no machine parts of that nature, like a Neuralink, going into the body at all, because of the environment. That it's not just about the chip in the brain, it's the environment that we're all saturating in, which is that eight sphere piece as well, to create a synthetic environment, to create a false ether, a sort of synthetic environment that's hyper electrified, discordant radiation around, that actually changes the natural environment. And then you're putting in a receiver in yourself. So
oh, right.
It's both pieces. It's the environment, but then also the chip. And so that's why it's complicated.
Interesting. It's the mineralization move in that sense. That is fascinating. In mystery circles, they talk about the silver cord, that pituitary, Leydig, and pineal gland. That combination is like the seat of the soul in the body. And so this is kind of like interference in that line. So it interrupts the silver cord.
Yeah, it creates a completely different process.
Right.
A completely unnatural process, a completely synthetic process that interferes with your natural ability to sense your own heart, to sense your own spirit, to sense your own thoughts, because there's this competing thing that's working its way from the outside in. Now, classically in spirituality, anything that's working its way from the outside in is possession.
Mm-hmm.
That's viewed as possession. That's something outside trying to get control of your faculties. It doesn't matter if it's an entity or technology, that is a that's a possession. You know, it has to come from the inside out. That's how we evolve. That's the difference.
Interesting. this reminds me of something. This is pretty far out to just lay on you, but I was watching one of these kind of World Economic Forum, this is what the world can be like in 30 years videos. And one of the things that came up was that you'll be associated by your brain waves with the interaction of a person. So when they figure out through this kind of network that somebody is a criminal or whatever, because of your, you know, you'll have this brainwave imprint of going back and forth with this person the same way nowadays you'd have letters or, you know, emails or some definite trace in police work for this person working with that one. Well, they're now going to be able to trace your electronic imprint and interaction with a person on a personal level so that they'll be tracking your actual mental wave interaction. This is part of it. This is control of the complete mass of humanity in a place that they weren't able to get it before, which is from the inside.
And it also gets into the pre-crime thing as well, that all that stuff gets into, like Minority Report, like pre-crime stuff too, which is really terrifying. But yeah, there used to be a natural, and this is the thing about technology, is there used to be this natural protection that we had when we would try to do super dark black magic things that go against people's will. Nature would prevent a lot of that. So if you wanted to, like, as a magician, if you wanted to drum up this huge storm, there'd be a part of nature that you'd have to get through to do that. You would have certain spiritual entities that would protect things that you wouldn't be able to overpower as one individual or as a group. You just, you know, but now with technology, what it does is it allows you to override nature. It allows you to override things that in the past we wouldn't be able to. You know, so it allows these kind of darker practices to really take hold. It overrides nature to a degree that would have never been possible to do during like John Dee's day or something, you know?
Right. Well, when you think with that in mind, if you look at CERN and you look at this whole process around particle colliding, now it's been part of this kind of you know, underground scientific cult around particle colliders. And I've tracked it as best I could, but I'll tell you the people who were deep into it were Trump's uncle, John Trump, Van de Graaff, the master of this particle colliding, the Varian brothers, who came out of the deep, deep philosophical temple, and the whole master Hilarion and that whole wave that set off Silicon Valley. There's some secret mystery teaching relating to the particle colliders that bring forward a different dimensional. It brings forward that interaction. You know, if you want to get in touch with Quetzalcoatl, all of a sudden that's so much easier. So what is it about CERN and its occult function? We know the cover story of it, and I do understand how it can become, you know, just the recipient of every single, you know, someone could think, oh, all demons come through CERN or whatever. But there is an undeniable occult link with CERN, the particle collider scientific experiment, and this other thing, including the fact that they've had, you know, these occult rituals, and they've had Kali, the Lord of Destruction, there out on the lawn of CERN since they started it with the collider. And they have, of course, the incredible Alice circular, you know, particle destroying. That whole environment seems to lend you into an entire occult space. So they are trying to interface with what?
I would say that they're trying to interface with the gods that they worship, the old gods, or the entities that they use in their rituals. And, you know, with, again, with natural magic, there's these blocks that happen naturally. Like, you just can't get to certain places. But I think if you use something like a CERN, I think that it can open doors and everything becomes so much more augmented than any than would be natural. And so I think they could potentially use it to do something like see the future potentially with this kind of technology. I think you can tear a hole in the veil or in the etheric or break into the etheric plane. I think you can do that. I do believe, and this is my opinion, that the technology does have to be stabilized by people. So one of the biggest misunderstandings about something like a CERN or these very advanced technologies is they do immediately tap into the person's etheric body or their bioenergetic field. They immediately click into that. So you can't use a CERN or one of these crazy devices and have it just do whatever you want it to do. It's going to do what you are.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's going to use your etheric body as its map and as its center. So it's going to break into that, and then it's going to reference somebody or people's etheric bodies, their consciousness, and that's how it has to operate. So it's not like something that you just turn on and control like a video game. It's something that you have to harmonize with in order to get it to work in an occult way. And I think this is why a lot of it remains very secret. I think they have difficulty completely controlling it. I think that it's very powerful, but the one thing is that you do have to have certain people in the room for it to be used for extended periods of time or for it to be used in a certain kind of way. It does matter who is there, and the people involved also play into how the technology works.
Interesting. So they're searching for certain types of people who can be library resources.
I would say so, yeah. And you hear about these people that go missing and things like that, and you know.
Oh, interesting.
And bloodlines and all that kind of stuff. And for me, that's what I think of, is what if you develop all this technology, you get it to this super high advanced point like you've been planning, but then it just doesn't work consistently. It just doesn't work how you want it to do, or it's just not, you're not able to control it because you're getting into that space that's quantum. That's, you're getting into that space where it's only the very consciousness of the human being that is designed to go, and that the machine must reference in order to go further in it. So it must be extremely upsetting and frustrating to have that technology, but to not be the lord and master of it.
Interesting.
Very obviously.
Wow. That is incredible. You know, it reminds me of, there's a Casey reading where they say, who's giving this information? And they say, where's this information coming from? And Casey says, it's coming from the subconscious mind of the individual who asked for the reading. So he's getting it. He's not going out there to get anything. He's going to you to get what you already know in your subconscious and bringing that out.
Yeah. And I think it was you that, I think your work on Keeley or Thomas Townsend Brown that spoke exactly about this as well, that yes. The technology sometimes wouldn't work unless they were in the room.
Yes, yes, yes.
So there's something about this. And if we add the Atlantean component, if we understand that an aspect of this technology could absolutely be something like a crystal, a charged crystal, that could have certain attunements to certain people. That mm-hmm. could have certain attunements within it that the machine is only attuned to certain individuals, to certain lines, to whatever. So if you're recreating the Atlantean technology, speaking about Casey, and you're just creating it for our time and our epoch, and you're just making adjustments to try to get that thing going again, this sort of ancient advanced technology, then there may be components with that they may not have access to all of it and control it the way they want, because some of the components of the technology are simply not theirs, or they're not they're attuned to something different, or there's a secret to that they don't understand, because it's not really a new technology. It's really this reappearance of something that we had during the Atlantean period.
Oh, right. Wow. CERN seems very much like it's some kind of interface between the Atlantean technology and what we have now.
I think so. Yeah, I would say so. It's like the same sort of thing, but reemerging in our sort of our own context, because the Earth does shift from era to era slightly, so these technologies would need to be re-engineered for the particular, you could say, density and mystery point. Where we are. Right. So
they would need a pole shift, and you're in a totally
yeah. So they would have to. It would take some time to, recreate it, because you're sort of reworking it in a way.
Could you see something like? Do you think a term like dimensional warfare is something you could apply to a device like the particle colliders on that level when they're used for those types of purposes?
Yeah, I had one very unusual vision a while ago about this, which was that every time a particle collider sort of thing is used, especially for a long period of time, with the wrong people using it, there's a higher angel that is replaced by a lower one.
Interesting.
So it's sort of like they switch places.
Uh-huh.
And so in spirituality, like in spiritual science, the cosmos is not just this idea of like a hologram or a simulation or just waves of energy, just frequencies. It is beings. So we operate within beings, and the cosmos is beings within beings within beings. And so when we use these technologies, we're not just like messing around with like waves of energy that are not alive. We're actually messing with a being, with an entity. And that's what we have to understand. There's so much teachings in the New Age and conspiracy community that make you the center of a simulation, that you just have to manifest, whatever you want. And this simulation, the simulacrum, which is a machine cosmos, actually. Mm-hmm. That's a machine cosmos. We live in a living cosmos, which means that everything in nature is actually part of the body of a spiritual being. And these are in different hierarchies going upwards of power. And so when these technologies are used, they're affecting the bodies of the angels.
Interesting.
They're either bringing forth, by their very use, certain entities from the eighth sphere, in which certainly the eighth sphere could be seen as Ahriman's body.
Right.
Yes. Right. You could see like New Jupiter, or, New Jerusalem is kind of being almost like Christ's body, the resurrection body of man.
Right.
And then, yeah. And then Ahriman's body is the hive mind, the non-resurrection body, the cyborg body that you step into. And so by using these technologies and using them improperly, you directly mess with the fabric of the spiritual planes, which means actual spiritual entities. You're actually messing with their bodies, with their, it's like a virus to them in a way, so we are directly messing with them, or bringing them forth or rejecting them through this use.
Well, it's interesting because it's a way to keep humanity from achieving their own spiritual evolution. So, taking into account this idea about Ahriman, which is this control, this dark astral control over everything through this being, his special relationship with humanity in this sense, which is he needs to keep them disconnected from their spirit. And there's this idea in, which I think is so brilliant, in mystery schools about the reincarnation, that you go through these different planetary sojourns and come back, and you go through them in the body that's appropriate for those environs, the Mercury body and the Venus body and all the rest. And, in Casey's work, he talked about the Venus body being the closest one to the human body. But it's interesting to me because the eighth sphere in Steiner's work is an interruption. Mm-hmm. So you don't go through that. So you don't get the ability to develop the conditions as humanity for a new Jupiter, for the next level of spiritual experience. You get interrupted by the eighth sphere. Tell me about that and how dangerous that is on an esoteric point of view for humanity to go through the eighth sphere as the doorway instead and then reincarnate back. You become more and more of a tool.
Rudolf Steiner talks about it. He does like, I think, 3 lectures on it, and he says that one of the darkest things basically is that there's these dark occultists in the world, part of these secret brotherhoods that actually directly contact the eighth sphere, and they use the process of death and beings of the death realms and completely feed into this and seek control through that too, which I always found to be incredibly dark. But
power zone.
Yeah, exactly. Or Edgar Casey would might say like the night side forces.
Yes,
something like that. Like that. That's they use those forces, and they really want to influence people in such a way so that they become trapped in their lower urges. So we see this incredible increase in like pornography and disassociation stuff, like scrolling all the time, or video games, or whatever it may be, or constant political drama. So it's all about keeping yourself disassociated or terrified and in fear all the time, or just constantly obsessed with lower impulses. And that actually, it really pushes people's energy in their lifetime into that power zone, or into that night side, into the eighth sphere. And then when they pass away, they haven't developed, their spiritual body. And when the spiritual body is completely developed, that's considered resurrection. That's considered eternality. So when you completely catalyze yourself, well, your etheric body, when that's catalyzed, you're basically a Buddha. You're basically at the level of a Buddha. But then when your physical body is completely transformed, transubstantiated, then that is, the final immortality, initiation. So that's what we're looking to do. Every life we should be working towards our eternality. We should actually be living in a very different way. We should be living in a way that is about actually service and kindness. The more burden that we can take on, the more strong and spiritually advanced we become. So we're living in this weird way that totally funnels essences of your own soul into that eighth sphere. So when you pass away, you have not developed as much as you could have. And then when you come back around, as you said, you pass through the different realms of heaven, the different gates, which in Western esoterica are the spheres, the planetary spheres. When you pass back around and you start condensing back into your life, and reincarnation is central in pretty much every mystery school, when you condense back in there, you've got these elemental forces within that eighth sphere, within that, that you have to take on again, and hopefully you can transcend them this time. Mm-hmm. And you can build that that immortal body, or the resurrection body, you could say. So it's this massive distraction that's going on where we're alive, but we're not living, we're not creating life within our own body. We're more so living and creating death. And Rudolf Steiner also called the earth plane in this world the world of death.
Mm.
So that was his opinion there as well. So that's, and you know, Gurdjieff says, you know, food for the moon. And the eighth sphere is the space in between the moon and the earth, right?
Oh, so yes.
What's he
yes.
saying there? He's talking about the power zone. He's talking about the night side forces. So it's like we have to live in such a way that we produce life, our own eternal life, and not resting our forces away into that space, because we become heavier upon incarnation. It can become harder to wake up. Unfortunately, no, people don't want to hear that in the New Age or the conspiracy community. They want life to be, you know, a lullaby. But that's not how how it really is. Of course, there has to be something at stake. Of course, there has to be a risk. Otherwise, there would be no initiation.
Do you find that when you're dealing with people and giving them that real, you know, especially people on the New Age orientation side, do they flip out when they encounter G.G. Jung saying, look, you know, this isn't just you projecting a positive thing, which is great, but you have to deal with the real situation?
At first, there was quite a bit of that, because a lot of people would come into spirituality from great pain, you know, from severe depression, from loss. And their way into spirituality was to ease suffering, mm-hmm. and was to become closer to God, to heal. And that's beautiful. That's lovely. And there's so much amazing spiritual, you know, perspective for them. You know, there is a salve in spirituality and in your relationship with God. But there also is, at the next level, at the next phase, there also is the objective reality of the spiritual world. It's the objective truth of death, the mystery of death. And you know, if people struggle with that, that's how pretty much every culture has viewed death. Look how the Egyptians viewed death.
Yes.
You go through the nine gate, they were battling with people, they were battling with these different challenges, you know, in the Tibetan system, people are getting, you know, chopped up and put back together again. And there are all these challenging things to death. Yeah. It's only in our modern time, even in Christianity, there's purgatory, there's hell, there's a second death. And so actually the classical teachings about death are that it is quite an interesting experience. It's not a lullaby that people want to make it, because they're making spirituality what they need it to be rather than what it is. Because it's unseen, people think they can make it what they need it to be, when in reality, we only really start understanding the spiritual world when we can understand that the spiritual world can be observed scientifically the same way the natural world can be observed. And that's our real freedom. That's what really cures the depression. That's what really cures the anxiety, is the deep, solid understanding that it is real and that we can learn about it and then use those lessons upon ourselves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Some of the things you were describing about people, you know, scrolling themselves into oblivion, or various addictions from alcohol, to gambling, pornography, and all these other things, and other kinds of addictions, just addictions to hating your favorite, you know, love to hate politician or whatever. That's another kind of addiction that we see really widespread.
Oh, yeah.
in social media. But those things fritter away the energies that it would take for this kind of spiritual evolutionary path for your own psychic abilities to develop. And, you know, people have varying degrees of psychic abilities, but everyone has them.
Yep.
And so you have this thing where when they're doing these little things or they're giving into these resentments online, they're actually giving away what are the building blocks of their own power.
They're pouring, because we started out by talking about how Ahriman sort of wrests away our energy.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's how he creates the eight sphere, is that he's resting away actually little pieces of matter, small pieces of that with our thoughts and our feelings that are discordant from our own development. So we're sort of pouring ourselves into the eight sphere by the thoughts that we think and by being disassociated and unconscious as well. And it does create that. And there's so many people even talking now about how they feel their mind has atrophied from using things like ChatGPT, and from they don't feel as though their mind even works in the same way as it used to 5 years ago.
So interesting. And so many of those things, the AI voices that they've given for these things, are drawn from those tech companies watching and recording the interactions of our emails, our direct messages, and social media and all the rest of it, and training this AI, saying this is how they interact. You know, an AI is kind of like this alien thing that's learning how to act like a human. In a way, you have the whole thing about hybrid aliens in the AI in a number of ways, because it comes off in the exact same fashion. I want to return briefly to the alien thing, just for one piece with this. If you were on this level of the grays and abducting people over this period of time, there seems to have been a tremendous drop off in the past 20 years of what people would record as abduction experiences. Why do you think that is, and how does it correlate with the things that we're talking about here?
Yeah, it is interesting, because if you look at like abductions, it really starts with like the Betty and Barney Hill era. You start to see things.
Yes.
It kind of reaches a peak in the 80s, 90s or something like that. And then it fades away. I mean, I think it's because we're starting to potentially get into genetic modification ourselves.
Right.
That could be part of it. I think that maybe they also have what they need.
Interesting.
You know, you go through a period of time, and if we go with the hypothesis that we're kind of working on today, which is that it is actually coming from the inside the earth, similar themes of hybridization and things like that, but for different reasons, you could say that they probably at this point in time, after doing this for say 50 years, they probably have all of the data and genetic samples that they maybe need. If we're looking at the hybridization piece, that could be just long enough to get what they need. And then now we're starting to mess around with ourselves anyway, which is the path that they took. So maybe they don't need that. So,
oh, wow.
Could be something.
So you're
like
saying
that,
in a way, that we've polluted ourselves so much that these groups that were kind of harvesting human DNA and things of this nature, they've looked at it and said, once you get past 2000 and all that, they're too encumbered by, you know, this particular thing, this mRNA or whatever it happens to be that we're taking in. And yeah, they just say, you know what, they've been taking in too many chemtrails and everything else. Forget it. You know, we're moving on to just use what we have. But that is fascinating, because something has happened there. And
it could be that. It could be that people are also onto them. I think that the topic is becoming also more and more saturated,
right,
over the years. And I mean, people are like, people get like their flashlights and like blink them in the sky looking for them. And you know, it's like, Like they're like calling them in and stuff. So I think that that's a different environment than like 1972 or 1985 or whatever it is. So now people are looking for them. A lot of them feel like they're their spirit guide. You know, there's all this lore around it, and I think it's just a different environment, and I think it's a lot harder for them to do what they're doing because their image, what they're doing, has become almost too saturated at this point. They don't have that anonymity, they don't have that mystery. And it's probably a lot harder for them because even when they like the Allagash, like you were saying, they're already trying to hide. They're already trying to do this, except for some of the cases in Brooklyn or whatever. But a lot of this stuff is at night, it's hidden, unless they really want someone's genetics or something. But you know, they really don't want people to get a good look. And so it could just be really hard for them with even technology, too. Like technology is so advanced now that it's probably difficult for them to operate, period, with different groups seeing them and stuff. So that could be part of it as well.
Who do you think grabbed Betty and Barney Hill on that New Hampshire highway?
Well, I'll never forget Barney's hypnosis session where he was like describing this guy in the ship and he's like wearing a scarf and he's like, this looks like a Nazi. This looks like, are they speaking German? And that always struck me as there's this weird thing that so many different researchers have picked up on that's like, did this German group that's behind the Nazis make a deal with these entities, these sort of, I maybe want to call them inner earth beings or something at some point? And are they the ones that took the technology and are in an exchange with them? Because they're probably going to need some kind of group on the surface to be in a mutual exchange with. And is that what has happened? And is that what Barney saw? Did Barney see, you know, is that why he described it that way? And you know,
Wow,
neither,
excellent
you
point.
know, they didn't say, you know, neither, I don't think they even called it aliens. Like they thought it was a government program. They didn't get that mystical, otherworldly feeling. That doesn't come till much later, you know, in abduction cases. And so for me, I'm like, well, kind of sounds like that may be a picture of something that could have happened.
It's interesting. I found out that Betty's grandmother reported a UFO in 1932.
That's early.
So something was hanging around her family. And I think Barney just tripped into the middle of it. And it's interesting because she actually seemed to cope with the experience of dealing with whatever abducted them. But Barney didn't. He had a very hard time with it, and he dies just 5 years after the incident at 45, really young. And his whole life kind of unraveled. He couldn't go to work. He had health problems after it. So he didn't have the whole, like, hey, I interacted with ETs and I came out great. It seems to have taken him in the opposite direction.
That's interesting because if we factor in these different pieces we're talking about, which is that what if this technology only works around certain people? What if they develop it to a certain point and they're like, well, why did it work yesterday on Wednesday when Gary was here? And then for the last 3 days, Gary wasn't here and now I can't get it to work properly. So, you know, it's like this kind of stuff. Where they're starting to realize, like, we've developed this incredible technology that really, quite frankly, thins the veil and has this transpersonal element to it. And then they start to realize, well, what is so special about Gary? Okay, like, why is it when Gary's here that the thing works or whatever it may be? And then they realize, oh, there's something in Gary's blood, or there's something about Gary that, you know, is doing this. And then they
You know, you created a Gary meme here
I,
right on
yeah,
the
instead of
show.
something about Mary, it's something about Gary. But that's what I'm wondering. I'm like, is that they just realize, like the double slit experiment, you know, like it depends on who's there. And then this leads them on this desperate attempt to do genealogies and to figure out, okay, if we want to control this technology and truly use it and truly be the masters of it, then we're gonna have to like somehow get access to people's genetics. We're gonna have to learn about why certain people are able to do this. And it's not just, and I can tell you right now, it's not just because people are psychic. You know, it's not about just plain old psychic ability. It's about several different things. One is initiation, but the other one is it's actually about the blood, in my opinion. So
Interesting.
I would say that. But yeah, I think that when you realize that, suddenly you realize, well, we need the technology to be powerful and to take over the world because the highest aspect of the technology depends on certain people being around and influencing it. So then, of course, you're going to get into like the Human Genome Project,
Oh, right.
right? You're going to get into deep, deep, deep into probably esotericism, you know, genetics. And you're going to want to figure out that mystery because you figuring out that mystery depends on you being able to control that thing that you built, that technology that you built that you need to control the world. So
Oh,
that's what I would say.
wow.
That's what I would say there.
Gigi, that is such a potent observation. It makes me realize the potential for this entire field of endeavor around these subjects and why the current field, ufology and all that, is so terrible with Gary Nolan and, Corbell and these either marketing hijinks or CIA hijinks or threats or whatever it is. It's incredible what they've done to devastate that space.
Yeah, it's so confused too. It's a very confused space. It's often the same playbook that's brought out over and over and over again, and then they get weird and frustrated that people catch on to it. Again, it's always military people or counterintelligence people, and real experiencers are often not at all included or used as a kind
Yeah,
of pawn and
right.
kinds of things. There's always
No, now they want the CIA people to be like, hey, I was abducted.
it's such a yeah it's
So you
such a
don't even need the regular person anymore.
exactly. And the podcast field will regurgitate these things over and over and over again,
Oh,
the
yeah.
same kind of content, the same kind of whistleblowers, and then at the same time they get frustrated that nothing's being released, we're not moving forward. Yeah, because we're regurgitating the same old three-letter agency slop
Yes.
for decades, and that's
Right.
why. So, I mean, we need to start having real
Yeah.
conversations about this that are significantly deeper. And like, you know, it is about technology. Forget about the wacky UFO file conversations that they've tried to stigmatize. This is about advanced technology. That's what this is about. And look around at Peter Thiel, at all these technologists and tech bros and the technocracy. And then we'll understand why it's so controlled. Is because this is all the same thing. It's all the same thing.
If I told you about intel that I got that Peter Thiel was putting together out there on the West Coast, all of these different Christian individuals who had founded churches and things of this nature, and has been quizzing them as like a think tank for the past 3 months about religion, what do you make of that from somebody like Thiel, who doesn't seem particularly religious at all?
He did very poorly. Peter Thiel did extremely poorly on his question with that. I believe that the interviewer was Christian and he was asking about Antichrist and Revelation and Mark of the Beast. He did extremely poorly on that answer, which
Yeah.
was shocking to see. And so I'm not surprised that he's getting some Christian focus groups because his performance on basic tenets of Christianity was shockingly bad.
Interesting.
And I think that the thing that's going to come up against transhumanism and ultimately individuals like Peter Thiel that want to, you know, create this surveillance state, obviously, cannot properly even express his own ideas, you know.
Right,
Very
right.
poor steward for something like this, just flat out a poor steward of this kind of technology. I think that the biggest threat that transhumanism has, and people like Thiel and others in the tech bro space, their biggest threat is Christianity, because that is the faith, that is the lineage that directly confronts it, and they know that. Because if you take any look at the data online, which of course they do, they look at it all the time to see what people are saying, they would see that it's the Christian community, whether it be dogmatic, the different dogmatic faiths, or whether it be the esoteric Christian side, you know, that's their biggest enemy. That's what's going to take it down, because within Christianity is the teaching of real eternal life. Right? They want to tell you that your eternal life is going to come through merging with machines, and right, that you're going to become a god and you're going to be immortal through this technology that they've created.
Yes.
And Christianity is the exact opposite message to that. They say you become immortal through Christ who dwells within you. And there is no external thing that you should ever take into your body at all. That's called the mark of the beast, many would say, in Revelation. We've been warned about this. And so, yeah, if I were someone like Peter Thiel, and I realized that after taking in all this data, that Christianity is the thing that's going to be the biggest issue, then I'd want to create focus groups and see if I could come up with the best scholarly and esoteric arguments to convince Christians that he's not a bad guy, that somehow Christians can work in the mark of the beast to their ideology, that we can have eternal life through a machine, even though in Christianity eternal life is through Christ and through Christ alone. It is the catalyzation of your body to be eternal through Christ. There is no way around it. It is what it is. So, but they need to tear that down and change the idea of eternal life into that sick Frankenstein thing. And that's probably what he's doing.
Interesting. Wow. It's so fascinating, because you get this impression that he's taking all that intel to try to figure out, how can I create a counter religion?
Oh, that could be something too, yeah.
But that all really works with what you're saying, because he's like, you know, how do I appeal to these people? But ultimately, how do I create a counter religion?
There's probably going to be some people who call themselves Christians who don't understand Christianity that might go for that. Because Christianity at its heart is extremely spirit. It's extremely esoteric. You know? Yes,
absolutely.
It's very spiritual. Yeah. So if you're like a materialist that just went to church a lot, you know, and you don't understand what the capacity Christ gave us to be eternal, and it's just a community thing, it's just a dogmatic thing, then I could totally see even people who identify as Christians going for this counter new religion, you know.
Interesting. Wow. And they thrive on these divisions as well, but they've had a particular thing with Christianity. I agree 100% that they've been trying to stamp out the very idea for a long time and get rid of things like the Ten Commandments in churches and things like this. What's interesting to me is I want to bring this whole conversation around. When it gets to your work, I'll tell you, it goes... And it can go further out and further out, and you just encompass all these different factors. And we could literally talk for hours and hours, as we have. But what I want to say is this. There is a segment in Steiner's teaching where he's talking about what's going to happen in the future. And he's talking in particular about how these incredible advances will come through science and medicine, and they will be rediscoveries of what we had in Atlantis, and the way that they'll be getting this information about, you know, making life, the longevity factor, and all these other things, is by scanning the unconscious minds that people hold in their memory about their experience in Atlantis and bringing it out. So what they're doing is they're actually rediscovering and redeveloping the technology based on these individuals and their past lives interacting with it. What do you think of that? And how would a program like that, you know, we know about remote viewing and these other psychic programs in the CIA and the government. But do you think there could be a targeted program based on what he's saying to go after these people's past lives there and harvest and kind of, you know, really go through those lives to get that technical data of what was going on back in Atlantis from their subconscious memory of their previous life?
I do think so. I think that there's different ways I could imagine that happening. One way would be through dream time. I think it would be possible to use people's dream time, which is when they're actually on the astral plane, to get this information from them potentially, especially if they had people targeted that they'd want to learn these things from. I think they could use dream time for that. I also think you could use technology in such a way that it could tap into the etheric world or the Akasha.
Wow. Yes.
Which I think is something that someone's talked about that. Was that Thomas Townsend Brown or who was talking about the, or no, that was Casey who said that there would one day be a machine that
yes,
you could like read the Akashic records with. And
you could
I think
literally
that,
read it as a machine. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and if you think about it, like the etheric plane is considered the memory of the earth, right? Like the etheric body of the human being is where all memory is held. Actually, it's not held in the mind. It's held in the etheric body.
Mm-hmm.
And so the etheric body, therefore, of the earth is all the memory of the earth. And so you could just use probably a machine to either augment a psychic, or there could be some kind of machine that could perhaps look at the etheric body of the earth somehow. And that would be as good as understanding Atlantis, because that's the Akasha.
Oh, wow. I can only say it. They must have already done this. And this is weirdness.
Yeah, they must have. They probably could have. There's probably some limitations to it as well.
Yeah.
Like you can observe an event, but you can't observe necessarily someone's wisdom about the event or someone's inner process of the event necessarily, or there's certain aspects of it that would be within the person more so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there would be limitations to it. I don't think it would be a godlike thing, but I think that they definitely could get enough information to be dangerous.
Oh, they could tap in. It's interesting. And I wonder how unsuspecting the people are, you know, how do they scan for these Atlantean initiates? You know, very often they say, well, they're scanning for people who've had encounters with aliens. Well, what about this?
Yeah, exactly. And I really like the more that I look into this and the more that I do my own psychic work, the more I think that really, it really is about this, what we're talking about Atlantis, about this recapitulation of the Atlantean period. And I think that's the context that is empowering, that leads us into actually having that anyone can have a way into this. My issue with calling everything alien and everything extraterrestrial all the time, anything that's weird is an right. alien, is that it's extremely just disempowering, because who are we going to go to understand who the aliens are? Well, we're going to have to go to the government. We're going to have to go to Lou Elizondo. We're going to have to go to these committees or whatever, you know, because
Prophet Lou.
Right. So really the whole alien wow. narrative really leads us towards interdependency with government, because they have the crafts, they have the bodies, they have this long-term study since Roswell. So it's just a matter of realizing that that's why it's like that, is because if it's extraterrestrial, then by default, the government and the deep state can control that, because they hypothetically have all these bodies and have all these ships and stuff like that. But when you understand that this is something that you may have been involved in during Atlantis yourself, you could have been a craft like that in Atlantis. You could have been, you know, working with this advanced technology in the Atlantean. That's exactly what Casey said. Casey did readings for people and said, you were involved as an engineer in the Atlantean period, or you were doing this, or you were doing that. And so it's sort of like we're taking all this stuff that we did in the Atlantean period that's part of our soul, and we're projecting it onto like some off-world civilization, and then waiting for the government, who is kind of our mortal enemy at this point, to tell us what it is. Like, it's a sick, it's really a sick thing.
Kind of cycle is that?
Yeah. It's a weird one. And it's like, why don't we just place it correctly, or in my opinion, correctly, and just say, listen, this is Atlantean technology. This is a recapitulation of the Atlantean period. We're just doing this again. And anyone can access their Atlantean memories. And you can participate in this disclosure yourself by remembering. And that's all that's needed. It's the same technology as the Atlantean period. Anybody watching you probably has experiences with it, which is why they're interested in it to begin with. But they can access that from within themselves. There's no need to outsource it to this, these weird government deep states that just want to sell you their weird technology and lie to you and get your money and make a space threat and do the COG. And it's gross. So it's kind of like, you know, we can just do it the natural way, which everybody can participate in and everyone can be part of.
Incredible. Wow. That is so, it's so interesting and how dysfunctional it is as you've revealed it right there. I mean, just phenomenal.
Gigi, and it's not that there couldn't be something out there. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what we're talking about today. That's what where I would lean. Yeah.
And they're false versions of that kind of disclosure as well. Absolutely. You know, it's funny because I was thinking about false disclosure because they have this space radar now and these incredible reports that we're getting about what might be under the Giza Plateau, as Casey predicted and Steiner talked about how ancient that plateau actually is. And there's the whole thing about the Pyramid Hall of Records, Pyramid X, that Casey had talked about. Here's the interesting thing. If they have that going on, the space radar, getting around the Egyptian authorities and seeing this, they've been holding that, you know, kind of the Giza Plateau under armed guard so that the right people can't get under there. Here's what I want to know. That whole thing about false disclosure they've done on the UFO file, do they now need false disclosure on the Atlantean story? Is that what we're going to see next?
Yeah, I think that that's also better for humanity. You know, I would rather see a false disclosure narrative about Atlantis because, and again, everyone can participate in that. That's much easier to work through than, again, to have everything be off-world and only the government has the bodies, only the government has the craft, only the government can tell you what they are. They reverse engineered the technology, the free energy technology that's going to save us all. They've already created that, and it's total control in the government's hands to ascribe to the extraterrestrial stuff. Where, so I would actually much rather deal with the false Atlantean disclosure, because now you're in a field that is true, at least.
Right, you're in the human realm, because the Atlanteans are human beings.
Atlanteans are human beings. You have lots of people that can participate in that. Now you're getting into something that's actually within the mystery school lexicon. You're actually operating. You're going to try to steal it. You're going to try to create a falsity around it. But you're already in a playing field that isn't your own. You're going to have to deal with what Rudolf Steiner says about Atlantis, Blavatsky, Casey, what someone like Graham Hancock has to say, or whoever else is participating in this conversation, you know, now you're going to have to deal with it in a different way, which is significantly healthier, I would say, because you have something at least that's, you're at least going to talk about something true, you know, whereas the other stuff was just, you know, very dangerous as an ideology, I would say.
Gigi, incredible. What an incredible magical mystery tour you've led us through this afternoon. Your series, Occulted, now you're doing the series in regular segments. Is it every week?
I try to. It's probably every week or every other week, whenever I can put it together.
Yeah. So we're getting like a couple of shows per month at least.
Yeah.
Sometimes three or four. And that is incredible work you're bringing forward. We didn't get to the Mars mysteries this time, but we're going to do a show just based on your Mars mysteries stories, because that is so incredible. And that line of work that you're doing about the elite's obsession with Mars and the whole lie around Mars, I think is remarkable. I want to encourage everyone to go to ggyoung.com, because that's where they're going to find your courses. And what do they do there when they enroll in your programs?
Well, we've got a whole community going on over there where we talk about everything that we talk about here. We've got forums. I do actually live Q&As. We go for like 4 hours, which is like a marathon of just esoteric question and answer sessions. And I do that every 2 weeks. I have classes. Excellent. I'm going to be doing more classes this fall. And yeah, I'd love to see you over there.
The classes, intuitive development, is it?
Yes.
I want the ability to tap into more psychic abilities, intuition. I can go and take this course, and when I'm done with it, I'm going to open up this ability.
Yes, I have those on there as well. And then I also have, I'm going to be releasing more intuitive development stuff and mystery stuff course-wise this fall. So stay tuned for that as well.
Fantastic. The innovation and the potency of the work that you do, Gigi, just incredible. Of course, you're an incredible contributor to the X series and all the things that we do on the program. And, your own, I think, influence in these subjects just is starting to really cause quite a ripple, so that people are starting to look at some of these subjects and saying, you know, there's something deeper going on. And I think I've heard that, and I've heard it on, you know, Gigi Young's work. And so that's the kind of ripple effect that you're having with all this, Gigi. And we'll have you back. And we'll also tell everyone, we're going to keep it a secret for now, but about an incredible project we're going to work on together, about something incorporating your psychic ability into a very important historical incident, shall we say. And this is going to be something that we'll hold off on mentioning, but that is going to be something special. So we'll do that when we do the Mars episode.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Incredible. And of course, it's Gigi Young on YouTube. That's where the series can be found. And then ggyoung.com if you want to go deeper and really get the real stuff.
That's right. ggyoung.com, Gigi Young on YouTube, and I think Mystic and the Moon on Twitter. And that's where you'll find me.
Excellent. Gigi, so fantastic to have you back.
Thank you for having me.